I said earlier in the guided meditation that anger or aversion, the nature of aversion is to separate. And it believes that separation is the way towards being happy, and that it orients to look for things to separate from. And so that very, that process is that kind of quality is coming up in the mind. It's shaping how the mind kind of orients to the world. Like, I began to recognize that with that habit of aversion, it's a very strong habit of aversion in my mind. We could roughly say, you know, the Buddhist psychology talks about these different personality types, basically based in greed, aversion, delusion. And mine was very much the aversive bent. And I began to notice that when I walked into a room that I was unfamiliar with, it's like my mind went to what it didn't like. It oriented. It would orient, like in this room, it would immediately orient to that spot on the carpet, that place where there was tea spilled. It's like, oh, that's not very nice. They didn't take care of the carpet, you know. That's the way this mind was conditioned. So the kind of habits of mind shape what we tend to pay attention to. And where do those habits come from? They come from our history, our cultures. And so there's a way in which what that cycle of dependent origination, which is what shapes our mind, it's not just our own personal stuff. It's like the moment of the arising of aversion in my mind, and I look back at my life, it's like there was a lot of conditioning towards aversion. It's like it's not just about my own personal responses to things. There's also a lot of shaping in that direction from my culture, from my family. And so that is, that piece of how do our own personal experience, our own suffering is connected to the broader forces of shaping and conditioning in our lives. And so, there's a way, too, I think we can begin to understand the effect that we have individually on that larger culture and become aware of that. You know, what are we putting out into the world, and how have we been shaped by the world? If we reflect on fear, and that fear kind of being ground in wanting to be safe, right? The wish for may I be safe is a wholesome wish. That's the wish of metta, but it gets kind of twisted. You know, it's like the wish to be safe does not have to result in fear.
No.
Yes, and so the when it does result in fear, there's something. So these wishes, I sometimes talk about these, the wishes for well-being for ourselves, for others. Those are wholesome wishes, and they kind of come up against the truth, the reality of impermanent, unreliable, uncontrollable, not self, and that kind of the mixture of the truth, the nature of life, combined with these deep wishes, wholesome wishes for well-being, that's where a tangle often happens. You know, the mind gets tangled, and the responses of those wishes when they meet those truths. It's like wishing to be safe. Experience is unreliable. Fear is born. And it's not that, so the fear is, I think of the fear as a tangle. It's like a tangle. But the tangle itself is like mixed up with those wholesome threats of wishing to be safe and the truths unreliable. And what mindfulness begins to help us do is to untangle the clinging, the views, the beliefs that make it a tangle, But, you know, sometimes I've had the experience with one of those tangles. It's like feeling the anger, feeling the fear. There's a sense of, that fear is unwholesome, so I need to get rid of it, you know, bringing aversion to that. And the idea is that that fear is a bad thing, or that aversion's a bad thing. And what I want to do is like take the scissors and cut that out. It's like get the scalpel, you know, take that anger out. But that's if we think about it with this thread analogy, this knot analogy, if we take the scissors and cut the knot out, we end up with a hole in our cloth. We can't really cut out the fear itself. The fear needs to be untangled through understanding the misunderstanding around these wholesome wishes and these truths. Because our minds, in the way that it's been conditioned, our minds are basically saying, these two can't coexist. It's not okay for there. I mean, it's either, our minds will say, you know, the fear or those wishes of safety are, you know, are what we kind of land with, and it's, you know, the truth of unreliability is just wrong, and I'm doing something wrong if I can't somehow have control of that feeling of safety. Or in touching into that sense of uncontrollability, we feel like, well, since that's uncontrollability is true, I should not want to be safe. It's not a valid wish to want to be safe given the uncontrollability. And so our mind, you know, kind of denies that wholesome wish. And what my sense of practice begins to do is it helps us to align that both of these can exist simultaneously. And the mindfulness begins to, it's like a lubricant, the mindfulness and the wisdom are a lubricant that allow that tangle to untangle rather than a sense of like cutting the knot out. The knot becomes untangled, and then we end up with a weave of those wishes with those truths, and the mind can understand that's the nature. It's the nature of the human mind, the kind of the more connecting more to the relative in a way, that's where we really touch into those wishes of may there be happiness, health, safety. Those are wholesome wishes. And as those, you know, kind of weave with the truths, the mind can relax and then kind of go back and forth between the relative and the, we could call it absolute, you know, the kind of the truth of nature. Our mind can go back and forth between those two without conflict. So not having that tangle. So I think that's an important reflection, you know, the fear is based in something, wanting to be safe. But that fear is a kind of a misunderstanding around both those wishes and the truths. The wisdom, the mindfulness, as we explore that, helps that misunderstanding to untangle. And actually, to kind of go back to the, I don't remember if this was recorded or not, but to go back to the sense of a almost a personality type of an orientation to the world. I talked about myself being aversive, and that orienting the mind to when I come into a space to kind of orient to what's unpleasant. And then you just asked about, that's not my experience, and I seem to kind of just be in my head. And, you know, Jack Kornfield talks about this way to kind of roughly tell, you know, what our, you know, what our orientation is. And he says, if you walk into a room that is, you know, a room that you've not been in before, you know, what are you drawn to? And he said, if you're drawn to the unpleasant, that probably means you've got the aversive bent. If you're drawn to the pleasant, that probably means you've got the greedy bent. If you're kind of like just kind of not connected, probably means there's the connection with delusion, which is not, I mean, it's not It's not a bad thing, actually. I mean, it's just simply, you know, another pattern. And actually, greed and aversion both have delusion in them. As I mentioned, the belief embedded in the aversion is believing that being separated from this thing is what's going to make me happy. That's delusion. You know, that's just a belief. It's not a truth. It's just what aversion believes. The delusion in the mind can take many flavors, and some of it is just like a disconnection, a not, you know, having more of an internal kind of in the thoughts or in, you know, what's here. And Jack says that sometimes that is demonstrated in walking into a room. It's just like, oh yeah, or like, what's here? You know, where, how do I fit in? Or something along those lines. And Sharon Salzberg, who talks about this, the internal experience of being a delusion type. There's whole talks on it. You can look them up. They might be interesting for you. So I would look for on Dharma Seed, the website Dharma Seed, Sharon Salzberg, and just under Sharon's name, you can put in a keyword, and I would just put in delusion and see what talks come up. But she says, you know, apparently delusional types make good traveling companions, because I would be like, you know, I'd be with a friend and we'd be traveling around and we'd enter, you know, we'd come into the room that we'd be sharing. And immediately she said, my friend would say, I'll take the bed by the wind, you know, that bed, is that okay with you? And she's like, oh yeah, no problem. And then, you know, she discovers later that bed is, you know, it's next to the window, so it gets a nice breeze. It also has the mosquito net that doesn't have all the holes in it, you know, so that the aversion type had kind of oriented to that, or the greed type had oriented to something. So in her experience, like the delusion, being the delusion type, she wasn't really oriented around pleasant, unpleasant, and then, you know, and then actually she did have preferences. It's just like, it wasn't her first approach to going into the room. And so, you know, so you might just yes. Listen to that talk. Yeah. Other comments or questions? Well, there's actually something more I wanted to say about this shaping quality and familiarity with the job description. So kind of our curiosity, a way that we can be curious is, rather than, you know, how does this feeling of anger affect me? It's more curious about, well, this is just this process of anger or frustration or love or whatever the state of mind is. And what is its nature? What is it designed to do? How does it function? And so the kind of the curiosity about that is a way that the mindfulness and wisdom can support us to learn. And actually, mindfulness and wisdom have their own job descriptions. And so the mindfulness, the job description of mindfulness really, I mean, this is in process for me, but, you know, we could say the job description of mindfulness is to be aware of what's happening in the present moment and to kind of know or track moment to moment, this is what's unfolding. The job description of wisdom is taking that information of what mindfulness has and understanding the conditioned nature of that experience, understanding the impermanent nature of that experience, understanding the unreliable nature of that experience, and in a way, I'd say, having that information, because this, I think the process of wisdom is connected with a very natural process of moving in the direction of well-being. Wisdom wants to free the mind. Wisdom wants the mind to be free of suffering. So it's a kind of, I'm using that language, wanting. It's not the tanha, it's not the craving kind of wanting. It's the nature of wisdom to release suffering. It's the nature of wisdom to guide the mind in the direction of release from greed, aversion, and delusion. And so as the mindfulness exposes the experience, wisdom being developed because we start with this perspective of a curiosity, well, what is the human experience? That helps the wisdom to grow as we are mindful. And so the awareness and wisdom doing their job allows the mind to move in the direction of freedom. And so at the end of the guided meditation, I said something like, you know, keep the practice simple. I mean, what is revealed as mindfulness begins to be able to be continuous moment to moment, what is revealed to wisdom is really complex. It's massively amazing what our minds and bodies do and what can be seen. But we can't do that seeing. Mindfulness and wisdom can do that seeing. And so the practice itself is really simple. And I think I said something like, let mindfulness do its job. Let wisdom do its job. And so the practice, what we do is understanding from what we've heard, what we've reflected about, that it's useful to be present with our experience. And we get little tastes of how being present with our experience, how the mind, the wisdom begins to shape the mind in a new direction towards letting go of confusion, letting go of greed and aversion. Also, it can begin to shape the experience of compassion and care for ourselves and others. And so that, the more that the momentum of mindfulness builds, the more we can really just step back and let the mindfulness and wisdom do their job. So it's not us making sure that that happens. Very first instruction Sayadaw ever gave me is just, the only work to give your mind is to remind yourself to be aware. That's the simplicity of the practice, to remind yourself to be aware. And that's the simplicity of the practice. It's not that we're trying to see all of this stuff. We are supporting the conditions for mindfulness to become more continuous so that mindfulness and wisdom can do their job, which helps us to, which the learning happens. The learning happens there.